Like the show? Want to listen to episodes early? Consider becoming a patron. Starting at the $3 a month level, patrons get access to a custom patron-only feed where we put out episodes of upstairs studio podcasts like the Childcare Bar and Grill, Miss Becky's Classroom, That Early Childhood Nerd, the Renegade Rules podcast, and others early. That feed is just for patrons. You could be one of them. Go to patreon.com/playvolutionhq or click the link in the show description to learn more.
Sam Balch, how you doing, Sam?
What's up? Everything is great.
Well, good.
That's
good.
Awesome.
That's good to hear.
There was a very solid, like, period at the end of that sentence.
It was, period, and don't ask me to elaborate.
The story might fall apart if you ask too many questions. In studio with me is Lisa Murphy. How you doing, Lisa Murphy?
I am good, thank you. How are you, Jeff?
I'm delightful. A little full of eggnog, but I mean, if you're going to have a problem in your life, too full of eggnog isn't a bad problem.
That would be a really bad problem for me.
So this episode, we're talking to Sam about clothing policies for students. To recap a little bit, we're doing an ongoing series of episodes with Sam about policies, program policies. She's been writing up sample kind of think pieces about policies in the on the Playvolution HQ website policy section, mostly to help people think about different policies when they're writing or revising them for their program. She pulls together some samples from program policy books she's found on the interwebs as samples. Maybe a, hey, this might be a good idea sample, and maybe this is maybe going a little bit too far and not the best sample. And we don't really tell you which is which, because what we want you to do is think about all of this stuff.
So right? So,
did I get it right?
You totally did.
Excellent.
We made it easy and also very hard for you. We won't just give you the answers.
Yeah, because if you're going to have policies, they should be your policies. And it's great to grab ideas from other places and everything, but it should really take the time to put them in your own words.
Why reinvent the wheel? Like, if somebody's got a really nice phrase and you're ready, willing, able to enforce it, and you can get yourself behind it.
Yeah.
Why should you have to work that hard to craft that phrase?
So clothing policies for students, where are we? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, because I'm racking my brain. I don't know if I had any.
Interesting. So the majority of the handbooks I went through did have policies for their students. Sometimes it was called what to wear to school. Sometimes dress. So that sort of thing. The majority of the samples that I looked at, and sort of as an overview, if you've already heard me talk about this, apologies, but you're gonna hear it again. I typically try to pull examples from a variety of different sources so that you're not just seeing policies in Southern California private schools. I want you to see policies from international places. So if you're an international listener, then the US, or if you're a United States-based listener, New Zealand. I want you to see policies from public programs, from private programs, from some family child care programs. It's a little bit harder for me to find handbooks that I can go through about those. So if you have some, send them to me. But I want there to be sort of a wealth of information and a geographical difference, a socioeconomic difference, just so you can kind of see what matches up maybe with where you live in the world, or maybe the kinds of students you serve or the kind of program you work at. Anyway, the majority of things I read were relatively short. So, and a lot of them use the phrase, children should dress in play clothes for school. And the first thing that really sprang to my mind about that is you might have a family that has no idea what that means.
Yeah.
So, rather than just saying play clothes, either define what play clothes is or just give examples of the type of clothing that would be appropriate for your setting. So if your students spend a lot of time outside, like if they go outside rain or shine, you need to tell that to the families so that they understand, hey, you should dress your child in layers because we go out even when it's windy and they might get cold. Or if you spend the majority of your time inside because that's just what has happened with your program, maybe you don't have an outdoor space right now, make sure they know that so that they're not sending in parkas for their child to go frolic in the snow if that's not something that occurs. So defining what you want in a more specific way is important. I only saw one sample talk about toileting, and I think that's actually very important, especially if you work with a lot of toddlers or children that are beginning to learn how to use the toilet independently. This idea that they should come to school in clothes that they can take on and off themselves, because that can be very empowering for a child who is learning how to use the bathroom.
You know, I'm going to interrupt you really quick because as you're elaborating, I'm realizing, oh yeah, I probably had about 8 pages about this stuff. It just wasn't called dress code policies for children. Uh-huh. And I'm sure you're going to get to it, but I've got to make sure it's either coming up in what you're going to talk about, or I want you to talk about it now. I was very clear in my expectations, but I also was very clear in realizing that not everybody who comes to the program has the means or the wherewithal to provide this. So yes. I made sure that it was clear in writing and verbally at intake that I got shit. I know you don't have 6 changes of clothes. I know you do laundry once a week in a cold water laundromat. I know this. So I'm going to stack the deck in everybody's favor so that you don't start to think that this high level of play is now a chore for you, and we're going to make sure that we provide what you might need in order to make that happen.
Yes, and I'm so glad you mentioned that, because that was coming up, because that is so freaking important. My previous job before the one I currently have, I was working in a homeless shelter, so at a program that exclusively served children experiencing homelessness. So the majority of these children did not have 2 full sets of clothes that they could bring to school in mm-hmm. case of accidents. They did not have winter coats. They had what they had. There is a great likelihood that there are at least some students in your program that have that same sort of barrier that mm-hmm. might not be able to come in with winter boots. So if you are saying, we're going to be outside no matter what the weather is, you damn well better be prepared for the possibility that none of your students can actually afford to do that. I promise you can find coats at a thrift store. I promise you can find mittens and gloves. If you've got a mix of families with regards to socioeconomic status, you can start some sort of clothing closet. You can just say, hey, you know, if your kid outgrows any clothes, can you leave them here in case we need them? Because, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes they're accent. You don't have to say it's for people that.
Right. You have tact.
Yeah. Sometimes they're accidents and we need extra clothes. We'd love to have yours once Jimmy outgrows them. And that is a great way to kind of stock up on clothes and hats and mittens, especially if you're in a place where it gets cold. And the point about laundry is also very important. This is something that I actually had not considered until around this time last year. I had a student who loved to paint. She painted all the time. And it was a very sensory experience for her. So she would get the paint all on her arms and all on her hands and then go wash it off. And it was, you know, that sort of washable, like Lakeshore paint. But it would get on her clothes. And I did not force her to wear a smock. It was always available. But if she didn't want it, I would not say, no, you can no longer do this because you must wear a smock. It just wasn't one of my priorities until the mother of this child came to me and said, I can't keep doing laundry every day. How come she always gets so messy? And my brain was like, because she's playing and it's awesome. And then I realized, oh shit.
Like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, I have not been taking this into consideration. So I switched it up then. Instead of having sort of those bright blue smocks where like it ties behind them and they put their arms through, I found a bunch of like old giant shirts, and I asked her which one she liked the best, and that was her smock. And she would wear that
paint shirt, yeah.
Yeah, and then that was just what she wore. And that, you know, helped both of us feel comfortable so she could still participate in that play, but I was no longer making life harder for mom. And if you're in a position where it's making life harder for the parent, you've then lost some of the buy-in they had to your program. So whatever you can do in your policies and your practice that make them an active collaborator and make sure that their voice is heard, super important, especially when it comes to their clothing.
One of the jobs of our policies should be helping everybody that comes into that facility be successful while they're there. And if you go into creating them with that kind of mindset, it maybe doesn't become as exclusive and painful for some people. Because a lot of times, I think a lot of the policies put together, Sam, sometimes there's examples in there that tend to create friction points in the policies instead of remove them.
Give me an example.
The clothing thing, if we're getting, okay. One of the friction points I always had with dress code, and we wrote this into the policy, is in the center days, we had two infant rooms, six infants in each room. And that's a lot of diapers to change. And
that's
so we put into the handbook that we hoped parents would dress their kids in clothes that make diaper changing easy.
Or
you know the things with 17 snaps in every crotch.
A lot more
time consuming for staff than slip on sweatpants and that kind of stuff. And so we were real clear about that, and you know, and explained why. Not hey, here's this policy because we're dicks.
Right.
This policy because
and here's the rationale.
It makes this process easier for staff, and then they can do it. It helps this physical task that has to be done, make it a little bit easier, and they can focus more on paying attention to your actual human child instead of
their pants.
Yeah, or you know, when they're learning to walk, they'd show up with pants, the legs would be rolled up. Well, when you're just learning how to have balance, when your pants are getting unrolled and twisted over your feet, it's difficult. So,
or even to the potty training, the toilet.
Exactly. And so we always tried to be very explanatory in the policies about, hey, here's what we expect and here's why. But also when families didn't have that stuff, we made sure the shit was there. And if they set them in the 14 snap overalls or whatever it is, changed them and then put them back in that at the end of the day. It'd be great if they all showed up dressed the way you needed them to be or wanted them to be, or the way that made staff's life easier. But
so I see that the policy is like it's the consistent framework.
It's a skeleton.
Then there's always going to be the within and the without, the reasonable accommodations that need to happen.
Right.
But at the end of the day, this is mostly what we're looking to have happen. My mom used to be an ice skater, and she would always say, "You throw the worst score out, and you throw the best score out." And that's so you got to work within that. You're always going to have representation from each end of that spectrum.
Yeah, you will have parents that bring their children to school in extremely fancy outfits, maybe because they have something after school, or maybe because in their culture they place such a high respect on schooling.
Yeah. And teachers.
Yeah, or maybe you have students that show up to school in pajamas. And
because we all literally just woke up.
Yep. So you've got two extremes there, and it's not your fault, but it is your responsibility. So to honor both of those extremes and do with them what you can within the parameters that you choose to set for your center.
Yeah, my ex-husband used to say that we just should have every childcare center. We never did this, but this was always his idea, that there should be almost like a changing room of sorts in the foyer of every single center. Upper class, middle class, lower, it doesn't matter, just a changing room. And if you were so inclined to come in and take off what you had on and assume something else, this is where you could go and do it. Not just when you walk in and leave, but like at any point during the day, if you're wanting to change, then you should have the availability to do that. And I think on some degree, although I'm sure it's not a center, this is the, you know, the JCPenney's changing room center, but you have that, whether it's in your dress-up center, whether it's in the extra clothes that might be in your cubby, whether it's in the extra clothes box that might be in the administration. If you're wanting to shed this, knock your bad self out.
Yeah.
But occasionally, was there a mama that I knew would always come in the fancy, fancy clothes with the girl? And you're like, you know what? Awesome. High five. Have a great day, mom. Okay, come here, darling. Go change your clothes. Go pick something else.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, I don't, literally the end of the day, not the metaphorical, but like at the end of the day, I don't want your mom to come in and see this crushed green silk flower girl dress with ooblet all up in it.
Yeah.
I relish seeing that happen.
Well, I would too.
We made it very clear in our handbooks that you can send them in whatever you want, but it's going to get play on it, and that's on you. And so if you send them in the fancy $100 white dress that they wore to somebody's baptism or something, and you want it to be clean at the end of the day, it's not going to happen.
But that conversation, I love that you said that. Because in my heart and soul, that's me. That's what's written in the book, and that's what's going to be enforced. The relationships, though, that you start to maintain and deepen and develop is going to be what moves from, well, I'm still going to send them in that anyway just to see what happens, to, oh, you know what? Let's change before we go to school today. Or it's going to be maybe on my end when maybe that's that weird, reasonable, accommodate, not weird, but where I'm like, you know what? I know this mom is always going to send her at this. Mm-hmm. I'm going to stop banging my head against the wall. You know what? You look, this is a beautiful dress. Say bye to mom.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Say bye to mom.
Bye,
okay,
mom.
Come here. Go pick something else out. Right?
So but Miss Lisa, I like my dress.
Well, okay. So that's some good role play. Awesome. Okay, great. Let me know if I don't know how I would respond to that in real time. I love that you like your dress.
Why are you trying to take my dress away from me?
I'm not. I just know that you're the kid that's going to be rolling around in the mud in about 30 seconds.
I like the mud.
Good. Go pick a dress from over there that you want to roll around in the mud in.
But mommy said I could wear this one.
Okay. Oh, man. Ooh, Jeff.
I feel like at that point I just let it happen. I'm like,
yeah, fine. Dear mom, texting.
I would probably write a note like, Jeff chose to roll in the mud in this.
I'm gonna go roll in the mud. Bye.
Yeah, see, I don't know. I there's a part of me that's like, this is just Jeff trying to be a dick on the podcast, and I know everybody's staring the dog right now. But I also know that if you've got the, where's Tasha? I also know that the kid who loves the frilly dress and loves the dress can often be redirected to another dress.
Right. Or that loves the frilly dress, will let no harm befall that dress because mom has made it very clear that this dress is the most worthy thing in the world. So he knows how much she values this dress, ergo she now values it, or he. This can also with their life. Dogs are very upset about this.
Hold on. Hold on. Jeff has to go. I don't think Tasha's
there. Make a podcast.
Huh?
Make a podcast.
Okay.
Tell me a little bit more.
I actually had a question for you, Lisa.
Okay, then I had one for you. So you throw it in.
Have you ever had any like sticky dress code clothing situations with children? Kind of like what I shared. And what happened?
Actually, it was funny because I immediately went to the language. I had a little girl who showed up pretty much every day in, seriously, a crushed green silk flower girl dress, like a velour, velvety, crushed silk thing, and her tap shoes.
Okay.
And she would shuffle step, like, she would come in every day, and she'd be like, look at my dress. And her mom would be like, bye, that's what she wanted to wear today. And then the mom would scoot out, and I would look at her, and I'd be like, you know, I love that dress. I love the feel of that dress. Go change your clothes. I mean, go change. Like, the child was more testing the mother, and I think it was a situation where the mother was more afraid of the child.
Right.
The mom, I don't think, really had a dog in the fight in regard to what her kid was wearing or if that was a reflection on her at all. It was just funny. Like, it was always this over-the-top dressing.
Right. It's kind of like the kid that comes to school in a dinosaur costume all the time.
Yeah. So, I mean, if it's not getting in the way of what you're needing to do. And again, I am, at this point, such a big, consistent believer in the conversation that needs to happen. You need a meeting, not a memo. Hey, clearly your kid loves to come to school every day in this attire. That's awesome. You need to, like, be honest with me, like cards on the table, honest. Where's the pissed off threshold of you? Like, what is the emotional investment of this outfit, this dinosaur costume, this crushed green silk flower girl dress, the tap shoes. Like, do you really care about this? Because if you don't, then I'm going to back off a little bit and just be like, go to town.
Right.
You know, nobody's throwing dirt and mud and paint at the outfit. But if this is just how your kid is dressing, and the same with pajamas, it doesn't even need to be something actually, you know, fancy, if that makes sense. But I think my second family childcare home was when I really, really started to realize that one-on-one conversations were, I don't want to say more effective than a policy, because the policy to me is the framework, and that's consistent. Like, that is philosophically where I stand on this stuff. But the one-on-one conversations, I need to know how you are really going to respond at the end of this day when you walk in and there's mud on the new $100 Nikes that you chose to buy a seven-month-old. Mm-hmm. Which, come on, why? But regardless. So no, I don't think so. I actually have had more issues with adults.
Oh yeah.
With clothes, I was subbing. I did a lot of long-term subbing, and the teacher that I was subbing for in this one particular scenario that's very fresh in my head, she had been gone for a while and she came back to see everybody. It was like 2 days before she was going to come back, and mm-hmm. we had been finger painting, and one of the girls ran to her, right? My teacher's back. And she stepped back and said, don't touch me with those hands. And I was like, ow.
That hurts.
Wow. Do you not know? Why did you walk into this building with something you cared that much about? And it might be sound bitey, but I tell everybody, go to Salvation Army, go to the thrift store. I don't care where you go. Go to the garage sale and buy about 10 sets of clothes that you don't care about, which isn't permission to look like you just rolled out of bed. But if your clothes are getting in the way of you facilitating deep, rich, meaningful experiences for the children here, then we need to have a conversation about that. Your clothes are not more important than what's happening with this kid.
Are we back on adult clothes again?
No, we're not. We were just in that really quick, she was asking, were there some specific examples? Did anybody die in your kitchen?
No, everybody get to hear me send my dog to his room?
We heard you use your very loud voice.
I'm sorry.
My direct question was, have you guys, and it's actually probably to both of you now that you're back, have you noticed that by putting this up on the website, have you gotten any feedback from people going, oh my God, I had no idea that I even really should have policies? And I'm not shaming or judging, but have you gotten any like, oh shit,
I've not gotten any personal feedback. Jeff, has the website gotten any feedback?
I've had not a lot of, there's been a couple comments on individual posts. I've had some messages via Facebook and other places saying, hey, this is a good thing. And I know that they are very popular when we put new ones up and when they come, I've got them set to repost to Facebook every couple months, the different articles, and they've been really popular because I think it's something people need to and are kind of looking at thinking about. So I know they've been good tools so far. Yeah.
But it doesn't sound like anyone is all of a sudden realizing they need to think about dress codes for children one way or another.
I mean, it's so hard to tell because people click and move on so fast, right? that a lot of times.
If this affects you, please contact Jeff A. Johnson at Mission HQ.
Yeah, if you're mad at me for yelling at my dog, but he had to go to his room.
No, we didn't.
He had to go to his room. Josie got here.
I figured it was Josie.
Yeah. He's very protective. Any more on this one?
No, I think...
Sam?
I would say if you are the kind of person that's literally never thought about this before, awesome. Welcome to the club of thinking about it. And it's, you know, really what you're trying to do is create an environment that's safe and welcoming for children to explore and make meanings about the worlds around them. So how they dress could get in the way of how they do that, or it could also help them.
I just thought of another thing.
I did too. So what's yours?
Go ahead.
Mine is don't be knee jerky.
Yeah.
Don't, I know that Jeff has a thing about flip flops, but let's say your school didn't, but then one kid slipped in a puddle. Like, don't let that be why now flips are banned.
Right.
Or lost a fucking toe.
Well, that's your dog, not the kid. But I'm just, don't be knee jerky. Say again.
Your dog wore flip-flops and lost a toe?
No, Travis's dog had to have a toe removed. Yeah, it's a Great Dane. It's very sad. My question was what about cultural considerations with clothing?
Oh, I wrote about that in my article.
Tell us more, Lisa Murphy.
Well, it was more adults. It wasn't necessarily children, but it was more adults that I acknowledged in the article that, you know, I do realize that there are certain religious groups and cultural groups that have requirements. I really don't really have a dog in the fight. I think I mostly wanted it acknowledged that I realized that there are some groups where you are required to wear a dress and you're required to cover your head and you're required to, and that's all fine, well, and good. And let's still make sure that those requirements are not getting in the way of still providing a play-based development and the appropriate experience for the children who are in those spaces.
Right. I think for
me, something that came into play sometimes was clothing was very rarely a thing, but clothing adjacent things like jewelry, gold chains on infants or pierced earrings on infants. I mean that
clothing
can become,
adjacent. I like that.
I think I wrote about that a little bit.
Yeah, because that can be a safety thing if you.
It very much can, and there are, you know, a lot of times there are cultural reasons why a very young child may have their ears pierced or something.
Yeah, and then there's the licensing people saying, hey, you can't have things in the environment that they can choke on. Right. I mean, one of those earrings, I mean, it's...
Oh, my cousin, when she was itty-bitty, she ate the first two sets of piercings.
Yeah, she okay?
Oh, yeah, she's married now, grown up, has about four kids of her own.
I guess it's not such a big deal then. It's really something to think about, and how far it goes into the policies is probably up to you. But
well, and I'll tease this here, and I don't know if it'll be a policy, but it's just something to consider, is that our own cultural biases and things, how we respond to things like jewelry on a 4-day-old or feeding children who are 4 or even breastfeeding children who are older than what your cultural norm might indicate is old enough. Just that whole, how am I viewing my job through my own biased lens? And I don't always say bias in a bad way. I don't think that that word should always have a negative connotation. But I do think some of the policies and how we're crafting our policies sometimes often are diluted with our own lens. I hate using phrases like
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely, because everything we do comes from our own culture.
Our own self, yeah. Own experience.
Hey, people, one thing I hope comes from your own self is the hope, the ambition, the drive, the dream of listening to the next episode of the Child Care Barn Girl podcast. Mm-hmm. We'll be back with that soon. Thank you for listening to this one. Thanks for sharing the show. Check out Sam's stuff at the Playvolution HQ site. Sam, where do they find you on Instagram?
You can find me on Instagram at student, teacher, all spelled out, all one word.
You can find Lisa Murphy at ooeygooey.com. You can find me at explorationsearlylearning.com. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.